Pranamya Murna Vahita Pritanjalir.
Natva Kira Sundritayam Vapricat.
Natva Kira Sundritayam Vapricat. Prasantamasinamakuntamedasam. Munim Dripo Bhagavato Pyupecha.
Munim Dripo Bhagavato Pyupecha.
Pranamya Murtna Vahita Kritanjalir.
Pranamya Murtna Vahita Kritanjalir.
Nadvahira Sundrita Yanva Prichat.
Nadvahira Sundrita Yanva Prichat.
The first line is low, not high.
Prasantam asinam akuntam edasam.
Munim dripo bhagavato pyupecha. Pranamya murtna vahita kitanjale. Natva kira sumrita yam apichat.
Prasantamasinam akuntamedasam.
Munim dripo bhagavato vyupetya.
Pranamya murtna vahita kritanjali.
Natva gira sunrita yan vapricat.
Prasantam.
Perfectly pacified.
Asinam.
Sitting.
Akunta.
Without hesitation.
Medasam.
One who has sufficient intelligence.
Munim.
Unto the great sage.
Nepa.
The king.
Maharaj Pariksit.
Bhagavata.
The great devotee.
Abhyupetya.
Approaching him.
Pranamya.
Bowing down.
Murtna.
His head.
Avahita.
Properly.
Kritanjali.
With folded hands.
Natva.
Politely.
Gira.
By words.
Sundritaya.
In sweet voices.
Anvapricha.
Inquire.
Translation: The sage Sri Sukadev Goswami sat perfectly pacified, intelligent, and ready to answer any question without hesitation. The great devotee, Maharaj Pariksit, approached him, offered his respects by bowing before him, and politely inquired with sweet words and folded hands. Purport: The gesture now adopted by Maharaj Pariksit of questioning a master is quite befitting in terms of scriptural injunctions. The scriptural injunction is that one should humbly approach a spiritual master to understand the transcendental science. Maharaj Pariksit was now prepared for meeting his death, and within the very short time of 7 days he was to know the process of entering the kingdom of God. In such important cases, one is required to approach a spiritual master. There is no necessity of approaching a spiritual master unless one is in need of solving the problems of life. One who does not know how to put questions before the spiritual master has no business seeing him, and the qualification of the spiritual master is perfectly manifested in the person of Sukadeva Goswami. Both the spiritual master and the disciple, namely Sri Sukadeva Goswami Maharaj Pariksit, attained perfection through the medium of Srimad Bhagavatam. Sukadeva Goswami learned Srimad Bhagavatam from his father, Vyasadeva, but he had no chance to recite it. Before Maharaj Pariksit, he recited Srimad Bhagavatam and answered the questions of Maharaj Pariksit unhesitatingly. And thus both the master and the disciple got salvation. Om Jnanati Mirandasya Jnanana Salakaya Shakchuran Minitam Yena Tasmai Si Guruve Namah Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Narati Svapadantikam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadara Sri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Srila Prabhupada mentioned that when a person already has learned music on his own, that it takes more work to properly teach him how to play than somebody who doesn't know anything, because it takes time to correct all the bad habits that a person has already developed. In the same way, by hearing from the scripture, when someone is very convinced that he knows many things, it's very difficult to explain anything to such a person. But if someone comes in a mood from, I actually don't know very much, please enlighten me, yes, then it is possible for a saintly person to speak. So that is basically the mood of humility that is required. It is not so much about the external way that one has to artificially glue one's hands together with super glue and sort of speak very soft when one's voice is very loud. In other words, one can be natural, but in a mood willing to learn and not in a mood of thinking, I actually know everything, I'm just asking this question, you know, just to show how intelligent I am. Not that kind of an approach or challenging, I disagree with this. Such kind of questions are not favorable for going deep in spiritual knowledge. One has to be willing to properly hear a saintly person and allow a saintly person to develop his line of reasoning. It's like once we had a program in some student society, and it was called banalitas, right? So the word banal means gross and so on, right? So they had a bar that was their student center, and there were no chairs. They had thrown sand all over the tables and over the floor, just to give it like that rough kind of look. And no women were allowed to be members of this society, but the women had their own society next door. So, and they were regularly invited as guests, but just, you know, they had no rights, they were guests, that was it. And they had one of these lecture pedestals. And I came with some devotees, and they invited me to stand there and to give my talk. Okay. Present it to us, you know, your Krishna consciousness. So they didn't even let me finish the first sentence. They already like jumped on the first three words, right? And everything was a debate uphill, right? So it became a lot of arguing. And then at the end of the program, well, there was prasadam, of course. And then because there were no tables or chairs or nothing, only floor with sand, really messed up. But there was a bar. So we decided to serve prasadam on the bar. And they all stood at the bar with a plate of prasadam. And I went behind the bar to speak. And suddenly I was an authority. I was a barkeeper now. And a barkeeper had some authority. So suddenly they were listening like anything. as soon as I stood behind the bar. So sometimes they have to fight
from Brahman to Brahman.
Right. Sometimes we have to find the right platform to approach people. Because it's not always that everyone is having the favorable attitude. But there, if we find a certain environment where they are more favorable, maybe then we'll be successful. Because although people may externally have a challenging attitude, by nature, the living being is inclined to accept authority, some authority or other. It's very difficult to, even for those who are totally against authority, to not sooner or later adopt some hero, somebody who's even better at rejecting authority than them becomes their authority. So in this way, everyone is inclined to find some hero because of our inherent weakness. Because we're all weak. We're weak in our conviction. We all need strength from an external source. Yes, I'm so convinced that I'm right. But meanwhile, looking over my shoulder, is there somebody who understands a little better than me how I'm right? Is there a book about it? You know what I mean? And we search the internet to find a book to support us in the ideas we're already having, hoping that these ideas will be more developed there so that we'll stand stronger on more solid ground. Therefore, we can sooner or later find a hole in someone's pride. Srila Prabhupada was expert at this. In London, they have a club called the Mensa Club. And the Mensa Club is a special club for those who are extremely intelligent. I think you have to have an EQ of something like over 145 or something like that to become a member of the Mensa Club, which is a bit more than the average, if you know what I mean, 145. And so Prabhupada was invited as a guest. Normally, anybody who wants to get into the Mensa Club first has to do the intelligence test. But this was waived for Prabhupada, and he was invited as a guest. And a prominent member of the club was hosting him. And this man was a very famous lawyer. And Prabhupada began, and with the famous example that one should pour water on the roots of the tree and not on the leaves of the tree. And because Prabhupada was explaining, yes, if you pour the water on the leaves, it won't really have any benefit. The real benefit is there when you pour it on the roots. Then the man said, well, I beg to disagree, because when you are pouring water on the leaves, you can make a delicious beverage named tea. It was like the utmost of British stupidity. But anyway, the man was very pleased that he so smartly counteracted Prabhupada. And he kept on doing it throughout the conversation. At one point, Prabhupada spoke about the sun, and he spoke about how there is the light side and the shadow side, right? And then the man said, well, that's only from the perspective of the observer. In reality, the sun is light at all sides. Prabhupada said, yes, of course. But that's what I meant, from the perspective of the observer. And like this, the whole discussion was going on for a long time. And then there was even a friend of this lawyer who was also trying to show that he was very intelligent by each time saying, yes, 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 I understand the point you're trying to make, and I really appreciate it. And all the time he was saying, yes, I understand what you're saying. like by show, you have these people who want to show that they're intelligent by saying, I understand what you're saying, which is like another symptom of a Dumbo. Anyway, so it was going on like this. At the end, the man said, Swamiji, I thank you so much for being our guest. It was a wonderful debate, a wonderful debate. I have one last request, you know. Would you be willing to do our test? And Prabhupada said, eh? Test? What kind of test is that? The man said, an intelligence test. And Prabhupada said, oh, an intelligence test? Intelligence is not very important. And the man was shocked. I mean, for him, intelligence was everything. And Prabhupada just very casually dismissed it. So the man was like, he was flabbergasted. His mouth was hanging open. He didn't, for the first time in his life, he didn't know what to say. And then Prabhupada said, yes, we have our own test. And the man said, you have your own test? What kind of test is that? And Prabhupada said, we have a test to test how God-conscious someone is. And then he just left him at that. Defeated in the debate. Prabhupada knocked him out in the last round with a full blow. So, yes, how nice. So, in this way, if one cannot hear, then it may be a little difficult, it may take a little time, then it may not be possible to get it at the beginning. No, not get it at the second presentation, at the third point, then the fourth, but Prabhupada got it anyway in the last round. So in this way, in this day and age, although a Vaishnava is humble, a Vaishnava cannot be timid. We have to be self-assured. We have to understand. We have the truth. And everything else is nonsense. It's very simple. Right? It's very simple. No matter how they present it, it's all nonsense. No matter how important they make it, it's all unimportant. And if one is simple, simply fixed in that understanding, then one can expose anyone, sooner or later. Because they'll give importance to things that are actually insignificant. What is the benefit of all these things? Just again, 2 days ago, in the book of Mukunda, I was reminded of Prabhupada's famous response to the interviewer, do you have a concept of hell in your religion? Prabhupada said, yes, London is hell. And the man was so shocked. He was so shocked. He's just like, really like so uncomfortable. That Prabhupada said, yes, but it is to a great credit of the British people. But first he said, yes, London is hell because it's always damp and cold and miserable. Yeah? And the man just remained quiet. And it was getting worse and worse. But Prabhupada then said, but it's to a great credit to the British people that they made such a civilization in such a place. And then the man said, yes, yes, a great civilization, yes. Yes. So Prabhupada not only knew how to defeat people, but he also knew how to make them feel good afterwards about it. So that they could home and think, he was such a nice, intelligent gentleman. meanwhile, they were smashed. So this is the art. The art is not just to smash, but also afterwards to kind of give people some credit. Okay. Lord Chaitanya did the same thing. When Lord Chaitanya defeated the Keshav Kashmiri Pandit, he met the Pandit. There was supposed to be a debate, and the day before they already met, and then Lord Chaitanya asked him to recite recite some prayers in glorification of the Ganges. So the pandit, he just on the spot he composed 100 verses and he recited them all. I mean, just one after another, a stream of Sanskrit came from his mouth in glorification of the Ganges. All the people of Navadvip, they were just like shocked. I mean, this guy is just something else. He's out of this world. How can he speak like this? And then Nimai humbly asked him, could I ask a question? Yes, 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 of course. Could you please explain the ornaments or the good qualities and the faults in the 64th verse? And there goes like, faults? Faults? I mean, there are no faults in the 64th verse. And then,
did he remember at all this?
Yeah, one minute. And then Lord Chaitanya started to recite that 64th verse. So the pundit was shocked. He's shocked, like, how could you remember this? I just presented all this. He said, Lord Chaitanya, Nimai Pandit simply said, well, some are great poets and others are Shrutidhar, they have great memory and they can remember everything. So then he said, well, in this 64th verse, in the line you said, Bhavani Bhartu, you said, which means the husband of the wife of Lord Shiva. So this is double, the husband of the wife of Lord Shiva. He said, so this is a fault. It's like the pundit was like shocked. A fault, and it was a fault, and it was exposed, and he picked out other faults. And how could he pick out all these faults just like that from hundreds of verses? The pundit felt totally, totally shocked. And then all the people started laughing. And then Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, no. We shouldn't laugh. We shouldn't laugh because, you know, the greatest poets, they make some faults. There are even faults in the poetry of Vidyapati and other great poets. Therefore, no, he is a remarkable scholar. So in this way, the pandit felt a little better again. Mm. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did the same thing, and Prabhupada also did it. And this is the art of preaching to those who are proud. One has to expose them, but at the same time, give them some credit for their actual qualifications, and then they'll become appreciative, because preaching is more than establishing the truth. Preaching means to make people favorable towards the absolute truth. It's not enough to just I'm right and you're wrong, done, you know. Sometimes that is also necessary. Sometimes we do have to defeat one person, but generally people, those kind of people keep on arguing, but we can, and it's difficult to defeat them, but one can win over the public. And in this way, because most people, they can see that Krishna consciousness is reasonable. It's reasonable. And when things are reasonable, well, then people will accept. Just as our case is reasonable. Like I tried on Sunday if we think that we're a product of just some of material nature, some a composition of chemicals, well, if you think about that, that's all I am, then what's the meaning of life? And I'm just chemicals. Then what's the meaning of life? Therefore, then I need a drink. Right? But when I think of Krishna consciousness and everything is eternal, then life is full of meaning. Because then what I do now has benefit or not for the eternal destination. Therefore, it's meaningful what I do. But if I'm a bunch of cannons, what the heck, you know, what's the point of it anyway? You know, just hit the bottle, right? And, you know, I mean, we may as well just be decadent and let go. And, I mean, what's the point? Anyway, yeah, we're just chemicals. So that's why we sometimes say that Darwin and his philosophy, who said that there were monkeys, and monkeys basically turned into man, sometimes we say that Darwin didn't achieve that at all, that what he achieved is that he turned man into monkeys. Because he destroyed the concept of eternity, and man was just a product of material nature. Therefore, what's the point in being moral? Why would you be moral when you're just a product of nature? You know, if I steal from you and I get away with it, I'm smart and you're a fool. You know what I mean? And it's like, it just becomes gradually jungle law. I was in Africa, and there was this little Mitsubishi van, a taxi, coming around the corner, full of African people, and there was heavy bass music playing, and on the windshield, there was a slogan. As they came around the corner, it said on the windshield, "Natural Born Killers." And I was going like, whoa, where am I? Those kind of the moments where you think, oh boy, watch out. Yes, natural born killers, okay, heavy. What are we going to do about it? Why was I telling this now?
Bunch of chemicals.
Yeah, animals.
Monkeys.
You became monkeys.
No moral.
No moral, thank you. Yes, he's got it. No moral. Jungle law. Good, well done. Jungle law. And because there is a philosophy that which is prevalent in African jungle culture, and that is, if I kill you, then I am good and you are bad, because you're dead. See the logic? You know what I'm saying? It makes sense. You're bad because you're dead. You know, it's like, I am good because I won. There is a logic behind that. Yeah? It's good to kill someone. It's good to kill and bad to be killed. That's jungle law. So we gradually get to that morality when there's no concept of eternity and so on. And this is slowly developing. So therefore, it's very clear that Krishna consciousness, it logically is better. Srila Prabhupada was not one to just preach from scripture. He was certainly preaching with scripture. He was underbuilding what he was saying with scripture. But it was logical. It made sense. He was with arguments presenting why Krishna consciousness is better. And it is important for us also. We cannot just blindly walk along like sheep. We have to actually understand why Krishna consciousness is better. Not just to convince others, but to convince ourselves. Because it may be true that people have a lot of tilak on their nose and big kunti malas and, you know, kavachas and all kinds of things. But that doesn't mean that they're convinced. Not at all. It does, you know, we are here. That doesn't mean we're convinced. Oh no, there's still a lot of work to do. And therefore we have to actually convince ourselves that this is really a better way of life. It really is. So let's try. I gave one reason why Krishna consciousness is a better way of life, right? Over the ones of the materialist who, who have no point in being moral. Yeah, and so on. Whereas if there's eternal life and you have to earn it, then it makes sense to be moral. So in that way it's better. Okay. Another reason why Krishna consciousness is better. Any volunteers?
From the point of pleasure, there is no negative reaction to like enjoyment and motive passion. So there is no side effect, there is no negative reaction.
Well, it's like it looks like the action itself is negative. Because, like, I'm denying myself. If I become a Hare Krishna like you, then I have to deny myself all kinds of pleasures. So I suffer already before. Instead of enjoying like everyone else, I'm suffering because I'm not allowed to do this, I'm not allowed to do that. Basically, when I become a Hare Krishna, then I'm not allowed to live.
It's intelligence. It's the use of intelligence. If you have a goal, then it's your superiority. It shows that you are in control, that you are able to, let's say, if you want to be fasting, you want to go on the beach and look really good so you can attract all the women, Then you can walk past the candy shop or the bakery without where you have a choice. You can do it. So in that sense, we are also superior. Because we have a long-term goal, and that is to be long-term happy.
What's your guarantee that you'll get it?
Well, what is your guarantee of what you're saying?
Well,
your logic is you're gambling. You're saying that if I do like you, at the end. It's all finished. But I'm saying that I can be happy now, but I can also be happy at the end. So it's 50-50.
Well, okay, let's look at it like this. What is the death rate in the world? 100%. That's for sure. Everyone's going to die, right? So, therefore, if you go for the long term, and you have some sort of theory that there is something after death, you could be wrong. Then, if you bet on the wrong horse and, you don't get any money, and meanwhile, your whole life, you didn't live. Because you were always thinking about, what would come after death. So you just stop living your life. So therefore, the Hare Krishnas are just living dead. They're zombies. Can anybody help him? Because I think he's in trouble.
But we are not living dead. Mm-hmm. We're actually happy even now. I don't know about you, but...
Any arguments? Just denial is okay, but there must be some argument.
One thing is that,
as Krishna says, susu kam kartu mapeyam, it's enjoyable even at the present. We are happy in Krishna consciousness. Wasn't it Prabhupada once said, and some journalist was arguing, similar argument. What if it's just all mythology, there's no spiritual world, there's no... Prabhupada, it doesn't matter. Even if it's, I would still do it. It's so nice just to be told.
But
somebody related that story. I haven't...
Let him say something. Okay. I wanted to go around. Yeah.
Just maybe that, okay, if we are dying and we didn't live our life, then we didn't live our life, okay, but
yeah.
Who cares when we are dead? Yeah. And if we live, if we are dying and we are still living after that, and we didn't live our life, then we care that we didn't do it.
That's okay that we didn't care when we're dead. But meanwhile, now you're alive. You're young. You're full of energy. You're ready to, you know, you could enjoy now. Are you ready to sacrifice the best years of your life and then later find out that it was all a mistake?
But I will never find out, because if I'm really dead, then I'm dead, and then I will not be conscious of finding out anything.
Yeah, but like, you know, now you can enjoy. Now you have the power.
But we are enjoying.
Are you really going to listen to a sour old man who would tell you, I should not enjoy, it's not worth it, because he cannot enjoy anymore?
In a few years' time, I will be the sour old man.
Then enjoy now, before it's too late.
If I will control my senses now, I will not be regretful if I'm old too now.
Why?
Because I have training now. If I bring my senses under control now, and I grow old and I control my senses, I cannot enjoy anymore with this body.
But what is this whole idea? Why is it so good to control the senses? Why not just, you know, be natural, be happy?
And then you have a car accident and you can't walk anymore. And then
that's bad luck. That can happen. That's not normal conditions. You know, that's bad luck. But under normal conditions, you can choose to just be natural, huh? And just, you know, enjoy it with whomever you want to, or spoil your youth. Ravana said the same to Sita. He said, "You're the most beautiful lady in the entire world. Why would you waste this beauty? Let's enjoy."
I have tried so many times to be happy with material enjoyment, many of them, but they are only temporary, everything is temporary, and then afterwards you feel empty. But devotional service gave me a much more happiness, and that you can increase the more you engage in devotional service, and that you can see that for yourself when you practice.
Yeah.
And I would also say that, like you're saying, that all statistics in the world are against it.
Mm. Are against what?
Are against this enjoyment that you're proposing. All statistics are against it. I mean, all, like psychiatry, all these mental diseases are increasing, everything is increasing. The more the enjoyment, the more horrible the condition. I mean, every statistic you look at, the environment is going down because of pollution. And mental health, bodily health, everything, all the statistics are there. And the only thing that it, with the increasing our enjoyment, the statistics go up. Isn't it?
Mm. That's correct.
Arguments.
I had one, but I lost it.
Okay, your turn.
Well, nothing really disappears. We know that. So why should just the soul of everything disappear? Even scientists say that everything just transforms. But they believe that we are just like a magic disappear after death of our souls. Why? Why is it so incredible if our souls will continue after death? I can't understand that. I take it more or less for granted. So I want to cultivate myself. I don't think I'm wrong, but if I'm wrong, I agree with this young man. So what's the problem if I'm just by sudden...
That's sort of Plato's argument. Huh? Socrates was arguing, like, you know, because Socrates was voluntarily taking the poison early in the day. He had to take it that day, but he could have waited till the end of the day, and he already took it. And basically Socrates said it's best to invest in eternity, because he said, like, if there is something, then I've invested at least in it. Mm. If there's nothing, then I don't lose anything, right? Because, you know, there will be nothing anyway. So, I mean, it's, if I'm gambling, then I better invest in the eternal. Socrates is saying. Yeah.
So, even like you said, that you will lose the enjoyment. Like, if why would he, you know, he's so young, give up, you know, enjoying all this? But actually, Krishna conscious life is enjoying. But we're enjoying through Krishna. We're enjoying taking the remnants of prasadam. We're enjoying singing his holy name. So that's enjoyment, but it's a different kind of enjoyment that doesn't take anything away from your spiritual bank account. You know, it's it just builds up in your spiritual bank account.
And he was also saying we're enjoying. Are we really enjoying?
Of course.
I mean, getting up early in the morning, God, it's early, cold, you know, like when other people are nice, warm in bed. Is that enjoying?
It's like one person asked me, but are you sure you're not being brainwashed?
Yeah.
As I said, on Sankirtan, and I said, well, either I could choose to be brainwashed by the society and being brainwashed to be a consumer, to just buy this, buy that, be happy, be sad, and take pills, that, or I can choose to have a real brainwash and actually cleanse out all this attachments to these things and actually live a spiritual life. And he was agreeing with me. So
yeah, good answer.
So you have like two kind of brainwashes. You could either be clean or be have a muddy wash or a whitener.
she knows about the wash.
And aren't we also like, we're doing all the basic things, I mean, except for maybe like a few details, we're doing basically the same thing. We're eating. Okay, so we're getting up early in the morning, but we have the whole day, you know, whole day is before us. We have a routine in the morning, and then the whole day is before us. And if you sleep late, then sort of you miss out the whole day when one can be active.
Okay. My problem is like, you know, if Krishna conscious, you're stating that Krishna consciousness is like kind of natural, and at the same time, then why is it necessary to live in such an artificial way? You know what I'm saying? You have to deny yourself so many things, and you say,
what things?
Oh, you can't eat this, you can't have sex, you can't drink, you can't do anything. There's so many prohibitions in your tradition. Hare Krishnas are forbidden so much more than anybody else who follows some religious process. And at the same time, they're claiming that it's natural. So it seems like a big contradiction.
But it is natural. That is a natural way. Because it's not natural to drink alcohol or get high. So who says it's natural? They didn't do it...
It's a natural product. You leave some fruits in the, you know, in water and see what happens.
No one tells you that you should eat it or drink it.
But well, you can try and then see what happens. In this
connection, the most reasonable argument is to say that it is natural for a human being to walk. But you have to learn it. You have to have someone... You need an example in front of you to... teach you, and then it's natural.
Nectar of the ocean.
And also, I would also say that, okay, so you may drink something, but what you get out with the high in itself is artificial, isn't it? It's like an imposition on your mind. It's like you change. It's like a changed state of consciousness, which is just induced by a chemical.
Well, the chemicals are natural. It's all natural products.
It's temporary.
So everything is temporary. Just prove it. You know, go with the flow. Be here now. You haven't heard of that philosophy?
There's no taste in it.
You just live the moment. I mean,
but
you know,
live the moment and serve Krishna in the moment.
Well, you know, it's like you can do that, or you can just do anything you want to do. Why do you have to become restricted? That's the point. Why can't we allow people? Don't you think that spiritual life is coming deep from within yourself, and that within yourself there is like a deep, it just emerges from your nature, and you know, we should take our natural place in this world rather than play an artificial role. I mean, I don't understand why you want to go to some process and act out a role of something you're not.
We're so contaminated, so we need the purification.
I mean, don't you feel like a little artificial, just in those clothes and acting out, you know, something that you're not?
You fake it until you make it.
Isn't that weird? Why don't you just
connect
with who you are?
But also, you know, like the outer has an, like the dress and everything, everything has a value. You know, even if it shows a sign, if like when I wear sari outside, people know that they can come and ask me about something. Like Jyotishwar, they know him in the streets here. So if they have some kind of spiritual question, they can just come and ask him. You know, even the tilak, when you're traveling, people just can come to you because they know that you have some kind of answer to something. They can come and ask you about what's your opinion about this death or karma or about this. So it's not just that it's something to look nice, the dresses and all this, and also that's practical. It's also kind of a help for other people. So even though maybe you don't feel like wearing the clothes or you know like you feel like being dressing like a devotee, then still it's a good thing for other people. So even maybe you don't feel like a devotee inside, you can still help other people because you know you have some wisdom from this literature.
Yeah, you would say that why should we restrict ourselves?
Yeah, why not be natural?
Why do we have to do it? But the restrictions are there everywhere, even in the normal society. If you are at work,
that's the problem.
People don't have sex on the desk.
Why not?
They just don't have it.
I mean but
in
you
every
know,
society there are some restrictions.
Yeah, that's the problem.
If not have restrictions, then we are like cats and dogs.
Well, what is the difference?
Is that a man can ask questions about what's the meaning of life.
How do you know what a cat and dog can do? Can you look in the mind of a cat and dog? They also, you don't know. Maybe they have so many questions about life. You know, why does human being have to artificially cover themselves with clothes and all that? You know, and be ashamed of natural things? Yeah. You know, like John Lennon saying, you know, why don't we do it in the road? And he was right, I tell you. Why don't we do it in the road? Be natural.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
But it's not natural.
Why is it not natural?
I'm convinced now.
Okay.
Oops, let's do it.
But it's not natural because then there would be overpopulation if we just have children everywhere. You know, it needs to be restricted. You know, it's a natural way of keeping population down by restricting sex life. Because if everyone was just having sex with everyone, then it would be...
Who would take care of
it? It would be like overly crowded and...
even their nature would also take care.
Just see the plants, you know? The tree is like producing pollen and sending it everywhere, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like...
He's on my side. He's converted.
And then you get the strongest, then you get like 1,000 possibilities of making the strongest plants, the strongest genes that go together. This, you know, restricting you, finding one partner, it's kind of, you know, you see all these weak, weird people, you know, walking around, you know. No, the other natural selection, it's much better for the development of the race, much better.
I disagree.
Yeah. Yeah, what's your argument?
Well, by nature, we are meant to be together with one.
We're meant to be together with one.
It's not my nature.
Well, that's your problem.
Well, I had this question once in a university. Mm-hmm. There was this girl who was asking the question, and she says, "I have 10 boyfriends, and I like them very much. And what's the problem with that?" And then all the students went, "Yeah, what is your hang up with sex?" Okay. So I said, like, well, you know, it's okay if you have 10 boyfriends and you enjoy it very much. That's good for you. I said, but there's something higher a woman can do. And that is to have a child. Because when you have a child, then it's no longer all about you. Then it's all about making a sacrifice for the well-being of the child. In that, you become a better person. But if you have 10 boyfriends, then it gets very confusing for the child who his father really is. Mm. So better you have one man, you know, and 10 children, if you want.
Ten children?
No. She liked it.
But normally people, they think this is terrible.
10 children.
Yeah. I think the trouble of having 10 men.
What?
I think the trouble of having 10 men, 10 children is probably much easier.
I mean, it's a nice answer because you just turn it around.
Sure. At least 10 children, they listen. You have a chance that they listen to you, whereas 10 men, forget it.
But usually people, they can accept the argument of being in control, that they have a choice, and you, at least here in Norway, they can follow that logic that you have to be in control, and you make the choosing for a higher case. Because they want, especially after this bomb, they want some...
There are many arguments we can give to people, and many people are susceptible to our arguments. I'm just arguing a little bit for the sake of arguing.
Right.
Most people wouldn't go as far as arguing the John Lennon philosophy. So all of you had some arguments that made sense. I was just arguing for the sake of arguing. Yes.
What if we, like in a discussion with some people, we know they're wrong, but we don't have the
arguments.
Yes.
That means that we are inexperienced, and it means that we lack knowledge, and that we need more knowledge. It says, Kanista has weak faith, Madhya is sometimes having insufficient knowledge, but has firm faith. Dham should have the answers. So we should we should read. Means we don't understand our philosophy enough to be able to see through everything. Because you have to live the philosophy, you have to always see the philosophy. And like Prabhupada is walking around and could just cut right through, because he always was seeing Krishna in the center of the situation. And if you see Krishna in the center of the situation, then it's really obvious what it says in Bhagavatam, that everything is measured in its relationship with Krishna. The value of something is measured in its relationship with Krishna. So whatever they say, you know what I mean, we have to just measure it. And if somebody says something like now, you know, it's all about the environment, and we have to do something. The environment is the new religion, it's the the most sacred thing in the world is the environment at the moment. Nature, even if you go back to it, people left nature because nature was so harsh. The reason, why is it that people have all these this artificial way of life? Because it was just too much nature. People were dying left and right, all kinds of diseases. People were having to freezing to death here in obviously in Norway. A lot of people would die every winter just from the cold. It's not so. It wasn't just so easy. You know, if it's a long winter and you run out of wood, what you gonna do? Such things can happen.
If you are heating by electricity and the electricity is cut off.
Yeah, that's the electricity. But the point is this, is that we're not arguing that modern society is not so good, but we're just saying it has given people an artificial security. And in a way, it has. It's a genuine, it's not false, it's real. I mean, life is much easier with a little electricity, a lot easier. And
with a little electricity, yes.
Yeah, and if there would be no electricity, well, you know, like I mentioned the other day, then we would be really have to work the whole summer to make sure that we have everything for the winter. Otherwise, it's a matter of life and death, right? If you're going to run out, you don't want that to happen.
Yeah, the society today is built up that you need to have electricity around you all the time because all the gadgets you have, it needs to be charged. And if you don't have your phone recharged, it's going to be like a
disaster.
So, and the computers, and you know, like one of my friends, she has a mobile phone from the starting of the 90s, and it still works because those were built to last. The phones today and the equipment today is meant to last maybe like 2-3 years, and then you have to get a new one. So it's just consuming, and it makes you addicted to being attached to material life. And
sure.
Unnatural.
And even if you're like an environmentalist and you drive an electric car, you need electricity to charge the car.
Yeah. We understand all that. But the whole point was that I was trying to make was like that it's kind of logical that people turn away from nature. So we're idealizing nature. You know, and an environmentalist is basically, you know, nature. Nature is heavy because it's the material nature. It's a heavy material nature, especially in the age of Kali. It's not like that nature is the solution. Environmentalism, okay, you know, we can be a little live a bit more natural, but to be completely subjected to nature is also a big problem. There may be a better civilization than the modern one, but the point is, this is material nature. It ain't no good. Right? Get out of here. That's the bottom line. It can't be fixed, no matter what you do. It can't be fixed. It can never be fixed, the material world. See, now it rains.
Now. It's been raining all night.
It's been raining all morning. Last 3 days. Since we came, it's been raining. It rains. And just, you know, at Janmashtami, I was in Zagreb. It was bright blue sky. It was scorching hot, even at night, with all the windows open and just sweating. No cover, you know, and he knows what that means. Usually I have like double cover from other people when I sleep. I'm sleeping without a cover. And then, of course, you know, it comes just... Anyway, I caught them in a piece of cloth and let them out of the door. So the material world is nature is not not just so nice either. You've got to get out of here. Yes.
Yeah, I just wonder what is the best argument against not restricting oneself to any point? I mean, if you come to that discussion,
You know, just do what you like. Yes, but. It begins with that no one is an angel, right? And everyone has bad qualities. I was on a railway platform, and there was a mother, a black mother with two kids, and she bought one big tub of ice cream, and gave it to the kids. So I was waiting for a train, and I'm watching the whole situation. I see how she comes back with a big tub of ice cream and gives two kids one tub of ice cream. So it became a fight, obviously, mm-hmm. You know, the kids are like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm watching it for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And we're the only ones waiting on the platform, and I'm watching the whole scene, you know. So at one point, I just asked her, I said, like, never mind, you know. I said, why? Why did you just buy them one instead of two? You know what I mean? This is like, she said, no, they have to learn to share.
Mm. That's a good one.
They have to learn to share. So there was a whole philosophy behind it. It's interesting. Yeah? And it's like, so this is the problem in this world. If we don't restrict ourselves, how can we share anything? Yeah? And that's the big problem in the world, sharing. People are like infringing upon each other's territories and so on.
Mm.
Yeah. And so restriction comes in right there to live together. Otherwise, it's war.
Yeah.
We just have war.
Cat and dog war.
Yeah, it's just like, you know, the biggest dog, you know, is gonna be. So
she was actually ready to take up that issue on. So it was actually very brave.
I know. You can see that. I was also impressed. I thought, wow, these people, they have some deeper thought in educating their kids. You know, one tub for two kids.
Yeah.
That was pretty interesting.
But Maharaj, in the text, Prabhupada, he says in the purport.
Let's go back to the text now.
Okay. No, it's just
like the horse in the woods. Yes. Go ahead.
I only have the English or the Danish one, but he says that that it's not necessary to approach a spiritual master unless you need to. Unless you have a solution.
There is no necessity of approaching a spiritual master unless one is in need of solving the problems of life. He means to say that this was in about the humble approach. So if a person is so arrogant that he thinks, you know, I've got the answers to everything, such a person doesn't need to approach a spiritual master, because such a person cannot hear from the spiritual master anyway, and is just going to waste the time of a spiritual master. However, if the spiritual master is expert, he can find ways to pierce through their false ego. Like, I was in Amsterdam one time, and Jayadvaita Maharaj was asked to give a lecture during Rath Yatra, and it was a half-hour lecture. And lots of people stopped, and lots of people were listening. And in the lecture, in a very neutral way, he was describing the qualities of an animal.
Mm.
Yeah? And the whole lecture was like just describing what an animal is. And at the end, one man raised his hands and was saying, are you trying to say that we are animals? That was success. That's a good lecture. That got it.
Mm-hmm.
He scored.
Bingo.
Yeah.
When I left the temple yesterday with my mother, she said, like, yeah, you know, I understand this, that we're consuming and people think we're chemicals, and so, but what is this about karma? You know? She doesn't understand this, why we have karma, or why can something happen from a previous life, because this is like out of her conception of that we can have
mm-hmm.
more lives
mm-hmm.
and the soul is eternal.
Mm-hmm.
So
she missed it. I gave the reasons, but she missed them.
Yeah.
Maybe she was distracted by the babies, because half the time there were two babies and she was like all the time drifting off to the two babies.
One Swami and two babies.
Yeah. Tough two against one.
Yeah.
But because I did explain it. I did explain that, like, but I could have explained it more elaborately. But, you know, otherwise there's injustice in this world, because one person is just gets a better chance than another person, yeah? And it all explains it, you know, why people are getting difficult situations and other getting very good situations. It's logical, because there's a lesson to learn. So karma means it's about a lesson you have to learn in life, and that you've developed. If you've acted hard-hearted and selfish and in the last life, then in this life you will be denied, so that you can experience. Your pride will be broken. Yeah? You're so proud from your last life, and then it will be broken, because you're being denied. So there's something to learn in life. And that's what she has to understand. You can work on it. Something to learn in life.
Mm-hmm.
And this karma is a way to teach us.
So usually we say that when we do yakya, then it rains. But around here it rains all the time, and
must have been a lot of yagi in the past. No, then it rains. When we do yagya, the rains, everything becomes regulated. Yeah. So the rains become also regulated.
Mm-hmm.
And when rains, excessive rain is another symptom of impiety, and when yagya is not going on, then there can be excessive rain. Yeah. So proper rains are at night,
mm-hmm.
and during the day it's dry. So at night it rains, good for the plants and this, that, and in the day the sun shines, good for the people. Yeah.
And for the Sangitan also, because we only have books without paper, and the Hiram also.
Yeah.
But
we can't do our
also
book distribution.
No, it's a little difficult to, yeah.
But now you're here, so then it's nice, because then there's not that anxiety, there's not that, I have to get up, but I have to sit here also and make bread for the Swami and all.
Yeah.
No, I have to get up. No, it's not there.
Yeah. No, and I have to eat the bread to accept your offer. So in this way, we can stay inside in the rain and everything is all right. We're sitting high and dry.
Yes.
Yeah, it's good. Okay. I guess he was hinting something and started talking about the bread.
He was hinting at the bread, obviously.
It was just, I think it was my nature. Something in my nature.
It's
mine.
Yeah. No, it's okay. Nothing to worry about.
Okay.
We'll manage the breakfast, for sure. Somehow, bread, we'll work it out.
That's Prabhupada's point, is that, you know, they're asking for bread all the time. Christians, and everyone's asking for bread.
The communists were saying,
yeah,
we'll give you bread.
Mm.
You pray to God, is he giving you bread? We'll give you bread. And they gave people bread.
Mm.
Just,
mm-hmm.
You pray to God, does he give you bread? You pray to us, we give you bread.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But you know the, how to say, what is it called? Prelude? Not prelude. The opposite. The after aftermath of that. There was a, after the communists took over, there was a huge famine in Russia. After they collectivized the farming. So
okay, but as a hardcore communist, I will argue that that's because the problem was it became the animal farm. You know what I mean? When the pigs took over from the farmer to look after the farm, and then the pigs moved into the house where the farmer used to live. The pigs start to walk on the back of their legs. The pigs start to wear clothes, and then one day the pigs called and the animals came, and they all said, "But what is this?" You know what I mean? I thought we were all going to be equal. And the pigs said, "Yes, but some are more equal than others." And that's how it all went wrong. So if we would have true communism, then it would be beautiful. Because then we would share.
I think that red color has faded a
little bit.
We just had two Romanians in our home, feeding them for Sodom, and they were telling that in Romania communism is actually really good, because now there's no work for no one. But when they had this, what's his name?
Ceaușescu.
Yeah, then there was work for everyone. So sometimes maybe communism is good.
I would say communism was good for some things.
In the age of coal.
I mean, it wasn't so sinful in the communist days as it was here in the West.
Communist,
but everything is like that.
Capitalism is also a thoroughly corrupt system. What we really need is obviously a culture based on spiritual life. So the debate is not communism or this or that. Communism is okay if it is connected with Krishna, but it's artificial to declare everyone equal. That will not work.
Mm-hmm.
That cannot work. Even socialism. Like in Sweden, where we are speaking about 2% of the people are going to the church, and where the state has become the provider, and therefore the family model has no more sense. It's breaking down family, and it's like more and more the family unit is becoming secondary to the state. State is everything.
Mm-hmm.
So when one's family units break down, then, you know, moral values and role models break down, then it becomes, so therefore impersonalism becomes deeply rooted in such a place. People become more Maya bodies. Family is important. Parents are meant to implant values in their children.
Mm-hmm.
Well, do you think, because I just met a friend, and she's from Denmark, and her mother was here also, and the mother says, like, "I'm going to have a new life when I come back to Denmark." And I was like, "Whoa, that sounds interesting." She's like, "Yeah, I'm going to get divorced." You know, I just spent 1 month in Norway taking care of her daughter while her daughter was working, and it's like meditating, I'm like, "Okay, now I'm finally going to leave my husband," you know. Like, so this is, and she was like 60 years old or something, 50, 60, you know. Why are, you know, people...
Because she suffered for like 30 years, you know what I mean? And finally she wants to, like, just be free from this miserable guy that's just, like, just for years tortured her. She said, "I'm not going to take it no more." Because so in a sense it seems to make sense.
It's kind of vanaprastha, or...
Yeah. In a way, it many divorces are like vanaprastha. That's true. They would be better off just taking vanaprastha. And, because, you know, you enter into a relationship and you just have some dreams about what it's going to be like. and then you land on the ground and you find out reality is not exactly what you thought it would be. And Goethe, he said, a child is a realist. He said, youth, an idealist. In middle age, one becomes a skeptic. And in old age, one becomes a mystic. He said, in childhood, you try to figure out, what is it, apples or bananas, you know what I mean? In youth, you know, you have your dream and, you know, what am I going to make of my life and it's all going to happen to me. In middle age, you know, it didn't happen. You become a skeptic. Well, you know, it's not what you think it are. Just wait a while, you know, says the middle age man. You know, you'll see, you know, in time. He said, in an old age, you realize that things are not logical. He said that the intelligent people, the qualified people who should be successful are not successful in life. Mm-hmm. And those who are just completely useless somehow or other, they are successful. And you realize it's not going on by ordinary, mundane qualification. Mm-hmm. It's all going on by destiny. Therefore, you become a mystic in old age. I thought it was really nice. I liked it. I liked it. So many people suffer it out in a marriage. Abusive relationships. Anyway. Supposed to end on a high note, so well, this would be a good end then.
So the conclusion would be that if you are ready to give up,
if you're ready to give up
married life, then it's okay. Then you can die.
I think if you're ready to embrace Krishna consciousness, make it a priority. That would be the
good. That you can also do within marriage.
Then you can be married. There's nothing wrong with being married then.
No. So that's what I'm...
Okay. Then.
But the argument for divorce...
For divorce? No. For vanaprastha. Argument for vanaprastha is there. For divorce there is no argument. Unless, you know... But it happens. And it's like... When you preach like the philosophy straight from the Vyasa Sam, then you would say divorce under no circumstance. But then when I deal with disciples, it happens. You know, several of my disciples have divorced. Yeah? And what and they came to me and they asked me for blessings. And I said, I can't give them. Right? I cannot. It's not a blessed activity. Yeah? It's gonna cause you a lot of distress. At the same time, I can also understand that the current situation is so full of distress that it is impossible. So it's like, yeah, and then like they say, yeah, but so my husband in this case it was. The man who was the problem, other case it was the woman who was the problem. So it says, my husband is now totally in Maya. He's no longer chanting, he's no longer following anything. He threw the altar on the ground. And I came home. How can I live with him? How can I carry on to live with him? I have my limits now. Yeah. He's gone back to meat eating, he's like, he's just... and now he has a girlfriend. So, you know, it's like, what am I supposed to do? Am I supposed to just stay with him? So, well, in Vedic culture, in such case, ladies would go home and they would to their father. They would leave the husband and they would be under the care of the father. But they wouldn't divorce because they were not going to remarry. So the question of divorce comes in is when you want to remarry, and that's then the issue. You see, if there's absolutely no prohibition. Of moving away from a husband who's a rascal. Right? Absolutely. But it's the remarriage part that's that's the issue. Yeah. And that's where divorce becomes a necessity. Otherwise, you know. Yeah, you're married on paper, so what? You know what I mean? What does it mean? It's just a paper tiger. It has no meaning. But it's of course not easy to just say, don't remarry. And many still have a need to be with someone, and they do want to remarry. So, okay, you know, to let it all happen. And then in the end, we bless it. And Prabhupada was marrying sannyasis who fell down and things like this, you know. So, on the one hand, we preach a philosophy, and on the other hand, we have to also be practical. And there will be divorces, and we'll have to deal with it. And it's sometimes not so easy to say
no.
Yeah. Because it can come to a point where it becomes really impossible. Then what you can say, like, well, I can't bless this, but I can understand if you do it. Yeah. It can come to that point. But you can expect trouble. I mean, it's like, you're damned if you do, and you're damned if you don't.
Mm.
You're going to have trouble if you stay with this person. You're going to have trouble if you leave this person.
How? I mean, in India, there's even Indians in the West.
Oh, yeah.
Just because they're brought up in that culture, sure. They just have.
I tell you the Indian way of having a divorce, the traditional Indian way of having a divorce,
mm-hmm.
was, you marry a second wife, and you put the first wife somewhere in a corner in another house, and but you still maintain her at a minimum.
Mm-hmm.
You don't let her die. That's about it, you know. You give something, but very little, and she lives in poverty, and you live it up with your new wife. That's the traditional way of having a divorce.
But it's,
that's why they do it.
Is it very common?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, more common than you think, yeah. Mm. Yeah. Going on quite a bit.
Have you been married with a new wife also, or just take a new wife?
Take a new wife and maintain the old one.
But
at a very low budget.
Yeah.
But do they have yagya with a new
wife? Yeah. You have two wives. Okay. What's wrong with that?
Mm.
And India is not here, so you can't do it.
Mm.
Yeah. Well, here.
Yes,
but I heard Jayadvaita Swami. He said a contrary thing to that. He said that, you know, in India they wouldn't do that.
Jayadvaita Swami is his guru. How you can?
Yeah.
No, that's okay. That's okay.
Yeah.
No problem at all. No problem.
That he would say that, in even, you know, they will not, even if the woman, if she grows fat and ugly, and, you know.
They will not divorce.
They will not divorce.
I mean, divorce, first of all, legally in India, it's almost impossible to divorce. Yeah,
it's the flower.
But they may, but as I said, therefore they don't divorce.
Mm.
But the way around it is then to have a second wife. That's not uncommon. That happens.
So is that...
Although nowadays there are laws against that,
mm-hmm.
in modern times.
In India.
In India. And then Hindus become Muslims, because Muslims can have.
Uh-huh.
And in that way they get around.
So they also become Christians.
Yes, that's not for the sake of getting another wife.
No, that's for the sake of eating stuff.
Yeah, banning polygamy also in India.
Yeah. Only Muslims. It's only legal for Muslims. Anyway, divorce is a mess.
It is.
But that doesn't mean that just being married to an impossible person is not a mess either. So when you have such a situation, then it's like, you know, a lose-lose situation.
I just felt so sad when she told me this, because I thought, like, well, you don't get to stay in a fight, you know. But I don't know. This lady, when she told me, You know, like it was like, I don't, of course I don't know the background, but at
no, you should tell her not to divorce.
Yeah.
That's the first thing.
She's like 50, 60.
Yeah, don't divorce.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not saying you should tell the lady to divorce.
No, I wouldn't tell her.
I didn't tell you that.
No.
Why
no.
You're sad, what I told you.
No, I was sad, but when
she
told me
yeah.
that she was going to get divorced, mm-hmm. because my parents split up when they were, almost 50, and, well, I was 18. And I was like, why don't you just stay together? You're there together for 20 years. You're going to die anyway soon, so... And then after my parents were... After 1.5 year, my mother told me, like, oh, I think maybe if we went for some therapy or something, we would still stay together. I was like, but why did you give up? You know, like, it's like... It's, and why are you telling me this?
Yeah.
So it's like... It's just like people just... I feel like people just give up.
Sure.
Instead
yeah,
of
because the culture is like that, you know, like it's offering yeah, divorce. They tell you divorce. Yeah, sure. No, so we should have a culture no divorce.
But that's also because people are marrying out of lust.
They marry out of lust, and there's no culture. Yeah. But even amongst devotees, we still have to learn to stay together. It's a lot. Devotees have high divorce rates, as it is.
You
said he doesn't like
went through it.
Divorces are horrible. Completely horrible.
But finally, you are divorced, so now you're only married to one woman.
Yeah.
We can make a little survey here, how many of us here... how many of those of us sitting here went through that?
Yeah.
I did.
One?
Well, I didn't. I was married for 24 years to the same one.
So when, when you take vanapras, then you don't divorce, you're still married on paper, but you were...
In the modern world, you know, like, people are marrying on paper, right? In the Vedic culture, they would just sit down the yakya and be married. So, you know, like, what you gonna do with the paper marriage? Different people do different things. I will not say on tape what I did with the paper marriage, or what I didn't do with the paper marriage.
You can turn off the tapes.
I'll tell you. No, I won't tell you. I'll tell her private.
Yeah, because we're just married with young people. Are like, oh, aren't you going to get the papers? I'm like, but the paper doesn't really matter so much.
No.
The family that really wants to have a celebration and all this.
The paper starts to matter when you have tax benefits
and
children. Yeah. Mm. So then at one point you want to register, maybe.
And when you die?
When you die it makes a difference. Why?
It's all about inheritance.
All inheritance. Yeah.
And when you get divorced.
Yeah. No, so I guess you should consider it one day. Anyway, I'll stay out of this part. Let's go for the bread now.
Yeah.
Super proper.
Yeah.